See, well, it's these large-scale, massive projects that you've not included all the stakeholders that you need from the beginning to get to a result of, do we do this or not?
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
Today with Doug Burkott of Baptist Health Jacksonville. He's the Senior Director of IS Business Operations. Doug, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Happy to share. For those who don't know, Baptist Health is a health system based in Jacksonville, Florida. It operates 7 hospitals and 200 ambulatory clinics, and it's a system with 1,100 beds and 2,400 providers. Today, we're going to be talking about governance strategies in order to improve efficiency in large healthcare delivery systems and achieve other desirable outcomes. On the screen, for those who are watching this and for those who are listening, you can go to podcast.healthydata.com to view the video recording and look at what Doug is sharing on the screen. We're going to run through a new concept of governance within kind of a frame that Doug will elaborate in a moment. So Doug, I'm going to hand it over to you. Could you please explain the book that you read as your inspiration and kind of what we're looking at and what you were able to do?
Yeah, so I pulled this from actually a lot of different sources, but the 4 means of governance, these are not like, you know, personality traits. These are sort of, I'll say, situational. A couple of ways of looking at this are these 4 different opposing forces, and the idea is to find a balance in between. And there's that famous book, The Art of War, where Sun Tzu talks about you have to identify your enemy if you're going to fight your enemy. And so I thought, well, you know, these are kind of 4 different enemies of governance, frankly. So while these might look like personality traits, they're not. As applied to governance, these are the things we want to avoid. So if we want to fight our enemy, we have to identify our enemy. So one of the enemies is bureaucracy. Obviously, with governance, there's so many different committees that things need to go through. And I believe in like minimum viable governance, applying the least amount of governance to get a result and to get a decision or to make a prioritization decision. So bureaucracy is definitely an enemy of governance, probably the one thing people think of the most when it comes to governance. And, you know, it's thought of as being safe, analysis paralysis, including as many people as possible to make a decision. And then anytime you start including vast numbers of people to make a decision, that usually leads to inefficient decision making. And if it takes 6 to 8 months to make a decision on something, the opportunity is probably already passed, or it's just sort of lost momentum. So that's kind of an all rules bureaucratic enemy that we have to fight. Now, the opposite of that is all risk. So imagine no rules, no standards, chaos. Let's say someone buys a product, they haven't involved IT, they throw it over the fence to implement, and it turns out, my goodness, we need like a whole bunch of servers to stand this up, or it's on a different platform we don't support, we don't have the skill set for it, it didn't go through any vetting, but you know, because they had the budget for it, they were able to buy it, and that's sort of like a no rules, no standards, absolute chaos, anarchy thing that we need to avoid as well. So that's the vertical axis. We want to avoid that too.
So just to pause for a minute for our listeners who aren't able to view what's being shared, we're looking at a X and Y vertical axis. You have a circle in the middle. On the top, you have anarchy. Directly below it, you have bureaucracy. On the left-hand side, you have mediocrity. On the right-hand side, you have toxicity. In the middle, you have balance, correct?
That's right. Balance is where you want to, as you get pulled in these different directions, you want to find a balance in that situation.
Mm-hmm. And before we jump into mediocrity and toxicity, just to kind of, I know you're into photography, so I want to frame the conversation with just the right lens, if you'll allow the metaphor.
Very well done.
you've mentioned that in past years, Baptist had an IT-led, IT-decided governance structure. I think many of our listeners can identify with that this feature sets are X, Y, Z. And it sounds like you made a reference to Simon Sinek about starting with why, but you flipped it around to saying business-led and business-driven structures. So instead of saying, here's the features, it sounds like a lot of what you're working with governance was determining, making decisions based on why we're here, what the desired outcome is. And within that context, that's how you set up this framework, right?
Yeah, I think IT people get wrapped around the feature sets and meeting the requirements, when in reality, in governance, it's what's the problem we're trying to solve? Because it's almost always solved by people and process, and technology is just an accelerator for good people, meaning knowledgeable people that know what they're doing, and good process. So technology being that accelerator and knowing why we're doing something is usually the fastest way to make a decision. When there's lots of feature sets and requirements, it's just difficult to make decisions at a governance level, at an executive level of why we're doing this. In fact, going back a few years, I was a new person, an executive leader had joined. I was going through our portfolio stack at a different organization. And I was going through each of these things, and I was explaining what these projects were. I was describing the what. Uh-huh. And she said to me, Doug, why are we doing these? And I was sort of taken aback. Well, I said, I described what it is. She's like, no, Doug, but why? Why did the business ask for this? And it's sort of like, oh my goodness, that's a really good question. I was kind of embarrassed that I couldn't explain why we were doing it, because frankly, the business wasn't explaining why they were doing it. So anytime I talk about a project, it's always the why. In fact, we just stood up a brand new project management platform, ServiceNow, and I built in a field when we receive requests, not just description of what you want, but I call it the why. Custom field we built in, the why. Why are we doing this? And the why isn't just a description of the what. It's truly like, what's the business background context that has nothing to do with technology about why we do this thing we want to do?
So what I'd like to allow you to do now is complete your explanation with mediocrity and toxicity. And I'd like to launch into a concrete use case example where you applied some of these principles to actually improve the organization with this governance model.
Yeah, certainly. So picking up where we left off, on this other side, so far to the right is, well, I call it toxicity, where it's, you know, just results over people. Short-term benefit is usually what it leads to, and not long-term benefit. So imagine saying, we've got to get this thing done. I don't care if you've got to work a weekend or cancel a vacation. All I care about is getting this result, full stop. Not caring about the people, which is obviously not a very long-term strategy to have. And so we want to avoid those things and planning ahead in time. The opposite of that, so going to the left, the other extreme is, well, I'll call it like all people. I haven't thought of a better name for it, but it's just really only about making sure everybody's happy and satisfied and all their needs are met. And if things don't get done, well, that's okay. No problem. You know, we'll get it next time. And this is constant kind of excuse of why things are not getting done. Well, that leads to a lack of accountability at that level. And again, nothing seems to get done. We want to avoid that too. We want to avoid mediocrity, but we don't want to pivot all the way to toxicity. We want to find the balance in between those two things.
I appreciate that. So just to recap for our listeners who aren't able to view the chart here, if you pursue a strategy of all risk, that leads to anarchy. It's opposite. All rules leads to bureaucracy. That's up and down. On the right-hand side, if you pursue all results, that's a toxic short-term culture, could lead to burnout. Or conversely, on the left-hand side, all people will lead to mediocrity. So the ideal is not to be extreme in any of these four measures, but to achieve balance in the middle. So Doug, would you walk us through how you a use case of how you've applied this governance model to improve Jackson Baptist Health Jacksonville?
Yeah, so I talked about it one time, again, a situation I was not here with Baptist Jacksonville, but in other instances where people buy things willy-nilly and they throw them over the fence. Other instances where it's just too much bureaucracy, well, it's these large-scale, massive projects that you've not included all the stakeholders that you need from the beginning to get to a result of, do we do this or not? So if it's an instance where it's a platform that's going to either replace a different technology, it involves, you know, nursing, it involves physicians, patient care, but it's only been sort of vetted from a small insular IT perspective and you haven't gotten those stakeholders on board early enough. That's where those decisions in bureaucracy will start to stall, because as they go through that decision-making process, you'll find that people say, well, wait a second, I didn't know about this. And what's this all about? Because it was only being handled sort of on the IT side of things. Mm-hmm. And even not just large things, even small things, if they're not being brought through the governance by the business, And it's just sort of just within IT that's leading this, you're going to find that things tend to slow down. And that's the other thing. One of the things when I was developing the governance structure with our doctors and executives and nurses and everybody within Baptist, I wanted to flip the script. So this is an IT governance that is led by the business and owned by the business. So everybody on our IT committees, they're all business leaders. IT is there as the guided advisor, but IT is not making these decisions. It's the business is the board, and actually the business person with the project brings it to that board, and we talk about it. And it always comes around why we're doing this.
Mm-hmm. How has IT been responding to essentially having been cut out of as a voting member of the governing body?
No, not cut out. We love it. Imagine this. Imagine if the people at Baptist that are in charge of our real estate and buildings and facilities just decided to start building and buying land all around Jacksonville. And then they're saying, you know, it'd be really good to have a primary care here, and it'd be really good to have pediatrics here. And like, wait a second. You guys are facilities and real estate people. You're not clinicians. You're not business people. It's the same thing with IT. There's no difference. We would never just start building technology and saying, hey, this would be really good for you to use. No, we want the business to say, hey, this is where this is where some problems we have, or these are some opportunities we can take advantage of through people, process, and then again, technology as that accelerator. Just like it would be like for the business to say, you know what, we're finding a lot of new neighborhoods are being built here. Let's put some primary care there.
So it sounds like the old model was building a solution in search of a problem.
To a certain degree, absolutely. And so, in IT, I'd say unless the business is at the center of that discussion, a lot of times rarely do we know exactly what the business needs. They're alongside us, and they're the ones that are making the decision. It's not IT. We're the trusted advisor, and we can help prioritize and sequence things, but ultimately it's the business that's making these decisions for IT.
So you mentioned an example of integrating a new technology platform. Is that an example that you've actually gone through with this governance model? Can you finish walking us through how that project got to completion?
Let's see. A lot of them have been new Epic modules. We implemented Epic last August, and there are subsequent modules that we're needing to add based on the demand for the business. And so we were typically
maybe for one of those Epic modules. What was the reason why you were implementing that new Epic module, and then how is that implementation or the way that project got executed different because of this governing model than how it might have been done a year or two ago?
Well, I really can't say how it was done a year or two ago because I wasn't there.
Yeah.
But it's definitely from the perspective of the business saying we want to grow the service line in this area, and IT, you're along for the ride with us and not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So and the outcomes of this new governing model?
It's gone really well. In fact, we're starting to find some really good data in these decisions. So, for example, interfaces, they're small in nature, but they're projects. They don't cost a whole lot. But we wanted to vet these things through our governance model. We found out, like, you know, actually, these are pretty small in nature. We don't need to govern these things as we do a large scale project. So we're starting to get to the point where we're figuring out what are the small enough projects that go through a formal governance structure, or which ones are just obvious that are going through. I think anybody that's in governance understands that, you know, not everything can go through governance. I think of governance as like, I hate to use the analogy, but like the federal government, we're like passing laws, we're doing big things. We're not doing the parking tickets at the local level, like the, you know, the order set build or that kind of stuff. That's not something that's governed through this structure. There are a separate governance structure for those operational type things. Mm-hmm. But this is like the big things that we're doing as an organization.
Have you set a threshold for the size of a project that goes through the formal governance structure?
We have not, only because it's so new. There is a lot of Gartner material that I've referenced as far as like, you know, how big is a project? Well, a lot of times you can't do it based on the cost of the project. A lot of times it's the complexity or the risk. So there's no like hard and fast number. Gartner says, you know, 400 hours, but, you know, what if it's a project that's 200 hours, but it's extremely important. It's got to get done. You know, immediately there's a high risk if we don't do it, whether it's, you know, we get, there's a fine associated with, or it's governance compliance. So there's, it's a tricky topic to say, what's a project? And I think any PMO director I've spoken with, they all have the same question about what's the threshold for a top for a project. And really it's a give and take.
Then who determines if there isn't a defined preset threshold, who's the one to determine if the 200-hour high risk project with a lot of complexity and the risk of a fine is something that should go through this governance structure?
It's typically along with the business, our IT executive team has a good example, has a good understanding of, you know, what the threshold is just based on experience. And a lot of times it's like heuristics, just like I said, just it's a highly risky project, it costs this much. So there's no real rubric that we have to determine what's a project. We have rubrics for scoring of our projects as far as complexity, risk, and value, but not a threshold for what's a project.
Got it. So the whole board, the whole governing team, they're the ones who kind of vote on whether something is large enough to require the board's attention.
That's correct.
Kind of like the Supreme Court, whether they choose to accept the case or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate using the big governance approach, but a lot of times it applies when it comes to, you know, IT governance.
Right. All right. Well, we're approaching the end of this podcast episode, and we've covered a significant amount of ground. You've introduced a new governance model, Baptist Health Jacksonville, where you flipped the structure on its head from instead of IT-led governance structure to a business-led governance structure, beginning with why. I guess I'd like to ask you to wrap up this episode by talking about, you know, you come in there and this is the way things have been done, and you try to propose a new way of being done. What was the why that led to you creating this new governance model, and how did you work to get people on board with changing the way our governance was led at Baptist Health?
Well, I don't want to think I'm the only one that did this. This is definitely, I'd say, the voice of the business needing to be involved and wanting to be involved in decisions that are made within IT. Just like the example of, we would never build buildings, the facilities people would never build them on their own. And I think that's actually one thing that our business people relate to, is like, of course, we would never have them just build buildings and buy property where we weren't involved. It's the same applies to IT.
Mm-hmm. Got it. All right. Well, thank you very much. For our listeners, this has been Doug Burkott, the Senior Director of IS Business Operations at Baptist Health Jacksonville. Doug, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.